overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Good morning. Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living. It's so nice to look out and see the congregation starting to come back. Some of you are still safe distancing, which I think is smart. I have a young man who is wearing a mask as a political statement to show respect for others, and I think that's absolutely lovely. But if you have been vaccinated, we're opting to follow the state guidelines and to try to get back to some sense of normal, whatever normal might be. Yesterday was June 12th. And I noticed that it was the fifth anniversary of the Pulse shooting in Tampa, where it was in Orlando. 49 young gay people lost their lives. But then I noticed also yesterday was the 55th anniversary of the Supreme Court ruling of the Loving Couple. The Loving Couple was an African-American woman and a white man who had been declared illegal. But 55 years ago, our Supreme Court said any state who will not allow interracial marriage, it's unconstitutional. So there's some good news. There is hope for the evolution of our species. So sometimes we take one step back, but maybe we take two steps forward. And we do live in Alabama here, so there is a challenge for all of us to see things in a more progressive, shall we say, way, to have a gay minister in New Thought teaching in Huntsville, Alabama. When I first came here 33 years ago, the landlord said to me, "You're lucky they don't burn a cross on your front steps." And I said, "Do they do that here in Alabama?" Well, you know what? In 33 years, we haven't had one cross burned on our front steps. So it just shows you where there is an intention to raise consciousness, to be openly who you are, and to embrace diversity with all its many colors, right, Sylvia? Then you just don't have to have a white calla lily. When the red and the pink and the purple come, you're all welcome. And I believe that this center is a place where everyone is welcome, no matter where you come from, no matter what your belief system. In fact, it's almost better not to have a belief system, because as my friend Bill Savoy reminded me this morning, we get stuck in the layers of our beliefs. And when through the grace of this incredible universe, something begins to awaken, it's the same something. I was talking to my friend Raul, and I said, "Thank God for Richard Rohr, because he gave me what they call the cosmic Christ." It was never, here's a Franciscan monk saying, it was never about Jesus, and it was always about the cosmic Christ. And then he has the chutzpah to say, the cosmic Christ existed here before the dinosaurs, before humans ever existed. Well, that kind of blows the mind, doesn't it? So what if it is this something so much bigger than any of us? The title of today's talk, I created an acronym, APOSTLE, always part of something larger. I couldn't remember always part of something larger, but I could remember APOSTLE, APOSL. We're always part of something larger. I was sharing at the revealing service, and Glory G will appreciate this. I had a dream that I was standing on the threshold of existence. And last Sunday, I talked about the pull of existence. Now, existence was this vast, spacious something, and I was clinging to my little piece of what I thought was reality, but the urge was to fall into that, trust that. That is always calling us. You know, yes, last week I shared with you the Sufi story of the little stream that was being called back to the ocean. It's a Sufi story that's about all of us. We're being called back to source. The Christ consciousness, the only begotten, is begetting itself in us right now. So what if this longing that some of us feel is the longing of the universe for its revelation? The title of this whole month, and you know, I pick these out months in advance because they begin to work on me subconsciously. So the whole theme for this month is the big reveal. There is something that wants to reveal itself through each one of us. this creative something, this loving something. And you know, many of us will think that this loving something has to be pigeonholed in a relationship. And so many of us struggle. We make it external. If I could find Mr. Right or Miss Right, you know, then I'll be okay. But ultimately, Mr. Right and Miss Right are an inside job. It's all an inside job. And so when we begin to find this something that we've been looking for in the world, we find it's within. And that's what Jesus' big message, his only message, according to Rocco Erica, was the kingdom. And he said, the kingdom is within you. But we don't find it. He says, the kingdom is spread out upon the earth. We don't see it. It's all the kingdom. It's all that something larger. And so what if we could know that we're here to experience ourselves as this vastness, as the universe, as existence itself? Dare I say the G word, God. There's a beautiful line in the Quran that says, Allah brings to Allah whom Allah will. So this divine presence is operating in all of our lives, and it uniquely presents itself. My beloved friend Marie, she has communion with trees, and she feels the heart of the trees. And then she said, you really think I'm crazy? I'm having a communication with a bird. I said, no, I don't think you're crazy, because we're all God's children. I think that's what Adam did in the Garden of Eden. You know, that's a reference, that's an allegory of our relationship to this beautiful planet upon which we live. And remember, Adam was living in harmony. The name in the Old Testament was Gan Eden, which means a consciousness of bliss. So originally, we as a species were in this blissed out place in this beloved garden that we all share. And then, I won't say it was Eve that led Adam astray, but you could say it's the emotional body that said, if you eat from this tree, you'll have the tree of good and evil, of bad and good. Well, then you will have the wisdom of God. Well, that's when we fell from grace. Because then we got caught up in duplicitous thinking. This is right. This is wrong. This is bad. This is good. And once you eat from the tree of judgment, with those beliefs operating, those conclusions, you can no longer stay in the garden. The garden of bliss, the garden of oneness, where everything is good and very good. It's an allegory. So the whole Bible is a storybook, a book of metaphor and myth to get us back to Revelations. Boy, I got this tickle, which is the New Jerusalem, which is the consciousness of peace. So when you look at our biblical history as a metaphor for how we are to awaken on this planet, you can realize that something bigger has been calling us all along. So I'm going to attempt to dance around this idea of always something larger today in a creative, playful way, realizing that it's always working on me, this something that's larger. I think of Rumi, who says, there is a field whose source is hidden. And when the soul lies down in that field, he says, words are not necessary. Even the idea, each other, does not exist. And then he says, I will meet you there. So what is this field? It's a field of consciousness. It's a field of pure awareness. I was reading Lex Hickson's book, Coming Home, The Experience of Enlightenment Through All the Sacred Traditions. And there's Ramakrishna. Oh, thank you. She knows that I have a little tickle in my throat. Now, isn't that sweet? Thank you, Terry girl. You know, this is the daughter that I never had. I knew that she was my daughter because when she was, I think, in first grade, she went to Baptist Bible school, and they told her the story of Noah and the ark. She stood up and she said, I cannot worship a God who will destroy the world and give us a rainbow. And she stormed out of there. And I said, now that is my daughter. Who wants a God that will do something as stupid as that? Kill everybody and then give you a rainbow as a covenant? You know, boy, you really got the idea. You don't want to sin, you know. And then what is sin? There's a whole nother sermon. So there's something bigger is calling us, and it's always been calling us. And I was reflecting on giving you a direct experience this Sunday of how this something larger calls us. It was years and years ago that I was 25. I was called to be a dancer. And when I went to master's to get my degree in dance, I realized it wasn't about dancing. It was about my experience of that something larger. So lying on a dance floor, I remember the wooden dance floor, barefoot, I'm lying there, and the choreographer says, all movement is discovered, it's not invented. And in like a holy instant, I realized that everything of value has to be discovered internally. It's not Nancy telling David how to move. It's David discovering how this something creates. And that simple, seminal idea took me to doing my master's thesis on the anatomy of inspiration, where I was exploring where did these creative geniuses download from the universe. There was this pull of something to write poetry, to create symphonies. And I understood that Mozart would hear everything complete. And then the challenge was how to express it in notes. So what if this something is offering itself to us, but we have to get playful with it. We have to engage it. We have to have a relationship with it. And so then as the young dancer who didn't finish his degree, he ends up in New York City studying with a lady named Gabriel Roth. And what she did with this large community, she had us dance the rhythms of the soul. So before you know it, I'm dancing the male energy and feeling this, you know, this kind of strength, assertive. Then we dance the female energy and I'm feeling this receptive, fluidic something. And then we had to dance our innocence. And all of a sudden, this lyrical little child came out and was skipping it, going all over the room. Then came chaos and all that rage and this out of control movement. And then ultimately she ended the last rhythm of the soul. We moved into silence and into peace. And you wouldn't believe it, but some of the most beautiful movement that the body discovers is when we are in a state of peace. So I had this experience of something larger through a simple workshop. You know, my friend Bill goes on many spiritual retreats, and every spiritual retreat, and I've become to think of life as a spiritual retreat, because oftentimes what you do is you go to a place and you pay a lot of money and you sit in silence. And then you realize that silence is the language of God. And sometimes it takes a whole week long of silence to get this addictive mind of yours to shut up. And when the mind gets still, well, then this something begins to express through symbols. Marie understands it. It doesn't speak in a language of words. It speaks in a language of symbols. And then can we pay attention when life is showing us things, this something larger, and saying, this too is good, this too is God. And so then through fate, and there are no accidents, when conditions are right, things manifest, I get a phone call at the center here, and it's a man from England saying, you and I do the same thing. And I didn't know who he was. He says, I'm a sex therapist. I said, well, I'm no sex therapist. And he was a PhD in, he was a doctor. But what he did was he liberated the soul through dance. And he did it in a very psychological sort of way. So he came to Huntsville right here at the center, and we did what they call the dance with the Bodhisattva. And the Bodhisattva is someone who, the Buddha is the one that awakens within us, but a Bodhisattva says, I cannot be awakened until I bring all others unto me. So he said, we have a community of Bodhisattvas, of people who are here helping awaken humanity. And so we were doing these dance things, and I noticed what he did, which nobody else had done, was he gave me that something larger. He gave me intimacy with each one of you, but there weren't separate ones. We were all merging in the one life. And so he would start off by saying, well, then I started doing my thing from him. It's all about intimacy, into me see. And so we would start a dance workshop, and this is how it would be. Imagine that you're in one of David's workshops. And the first thing is, it's called Dance with the Beloved, realizing it's all the Beloved. So you're dancing with the divine, that's something bigger. The first thing we'd walk in, and the one rule is you cannot speak, because as soon as you start to speak, your mind gets engaged. Now imagine to be mute. So Karen Drucker, thank you for this day, spirit. Thank you for this day. You're walking in this beautiful day. Already your hearts are opening. Then thank you for my friends, spirit. Thank you for my friends. Thank you for my friends, spirit. Thank you for my friends, my wonderful friends. And so automatically you're creating this equanimity, this sense of that we're all connected in this beautiful day that we're grateful for. Then in silence, the next song would be, love is in the air, everywhere I look around. And you're setting yourself free. Love is in the air with every sight and every sound. And you feel that you're merging with this love vibration. And then comes this incredible, profound silence and stillness. And you're looking in the face of everyone in the circle. And then they say, pair up with somebody. And I pair up with a Michael. And one of you receives, like Michael would stand there, and David would make love to him in a very appropriate way. Maybe touching his cheek, putting his arms around him. You are the heart. You are the hand. You are the voice of spirit on earth. And who you are and all you do is a blessing to the world. And then tears will come down because he's hearing this beautiful presence. You are the heart. You are the hands. You are the voice of spirit on earth. And who we are and all we do is a blessing to the world. Now that is a truly orgasmic experience of being loved. And the equanimity is that everyone is loving everybody else. I did this workshop in London, and I was given the title of a talk, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, and I realized that people are most afraid of intimacy. So I did this exercise in London, and this British woman said, I felt the love of God for the first time with a total stranger hugging me. I said, well, that's how it works. She felt love for the first time because she was open to receive this equanimity of love, just like you do singing to the bird. The bird knows its love. Susan has a nest that keeps having visitors come to it because they know it's a safe place to nest. So what if these animals aren't dumb animals? They choose their human because of the qualities. So the dance workshop's going, and finally, you're standing in a big circle in the silence. You've had this merging experience with everyone, and then you'll hear Karen Drucker sing, You are the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God. And then you begin to realize it's not just the people that are the face of God, it's everyone is the face of God. It's all around you. And then, moving into the stillness, you hear, Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know. And there you are, standing in the stillness, standing in the silence. And you realize that you're something, you're part of something so much larger than the local self. You are the drop that has discovered its nature as the ocean. And you're no longer arguing for your drop consciousness. And then you hear Rumi, oh drop, give it up. The ocean for a drop? Oh, to be wooed by the ocean, says Rumi. So what if we knew that we are being wooed? We are being courted by this divine love. Once you've experienced divine love, which has equanimity, you know, one person isn't going to really do it for you. Yes, it could be lovely to make a commitment to one person, but when you realize it's all the same love, and then you hear Rumi, all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. What drowns is the idea of me is separate from the ocean of love. Then all is the ocean of love. I'm looking out at you and I'm feeling waves of love pouring at you, and it's not personal. It's never been personal. It's love meeting love. So I'm going to give you a little taste of my Franciscan monk friend, Raoul, and I, we love this guy. He's so courageous. He's just like you, Terry girl. He speaks truth to power, and they don't like what they hear. And he starts off in this little book called Just This, so profound. He talks about Moses, the murderer. Did you know Moses was a murderer? That's what set him free. He killed the Philistine, and he had to flee Egypt. So Moses killed the Philistine. He flees Egypt as a murderer. And he says, the murderer Moses, on the run from the law, encounters a paradoxical bush that burns without being consumed. Now, the burning bush is not something that literally happened. It's just like you, Marie, that sees the heart of a tree. He saw that everything was illuminated from within. He's having a cosmic consciousness experience. So he's saying, let's go back to this experience of Moses. Struck by awe, it says he takes off his shoes. Now, metaphorically, the feet mean understanding. So if you take off the shoes, you take off probably the belief that keeps you from understanding. And so he's barefoot. This is the metaphor. He takes off his shoes and the very earth beneath his feet becomes holy ground. Exodus 3. Because he has met beingness itself. Exodus 3. What we are is that beingness itself, Richard Rohr. And this narrative reveals a classic pattern that's repeated in different forms in various lives and the vocabulary of the world's mystics. A mystic is someone who recognizes that it's all God. In the science of mind, it's written at three levels. Sylvie was talking about a graduation ceremony. And what they don't really teach the students, and you learn it through 33 years of ministry, is the first level is a mental science. You know, it's about your thoughts, change your thinking, change your life. That's the very lowest level. The second level is the religious science. There's a power for good greater than you are, and you can use it. Now, it's greater than we because it's the universe itself. And so when we begin to use the universal mind instead of the local mind, well, then we're operating from that greater power. But there's still a slight sense of duality there. Power greater than you and you. The third level of evolution is the mystical. And that's where you realize it's all that. Everything is the mind of God. Everything is the face of God. Even the lowliest of these. And then you hear Meister Eckhart says, he who can see God in the smallest of things is better than seeing an angel. I came into the center this morning. I get here at 7 something. And I was watering the plants, and there was a little wasp in the foyer out there. He was waddling around the floor with his little wings, and he was buzzing. And I realized I could be cruel and step on the wasp, or I could go and take a little cup, put it over the wasp, slide a little thing under, and I went outside, and I opened the cup, and he flew off. Just a little thing, but a thing of liberation, because I'm not separate from that little wasp. He goes on to say, the way to any universal idea is to proceed through a concrete encounter, even the smallest encounter. There are a number of ways to say the same thing. The one is the way to the many. The specific is the way to the spaciousness. The now is the way to the always. Don't you love the way he thinks, Raoul? And the here is the way to the everywhere. When you be here now, you're everywhere because it all exists simultaneously. This is the mystic awareness. The material is the way to the spiritual. It's not about transcending the material. It's about seeing the sacred right there in your own dog that digs holes. You know, Bert used to dig the best holes. When we go to Cape Cod, he would dig a hole to China in that sand so deep, and then baby Speck would curl up in the hole. They had kind of a relationship. Now, am I going to shame him because he dug a hole? That's what his job was. I'm a good dog. I'm a good hole digger. That's my job. The visible is the way to the invisible. And when we see contemplatively, now this is all about a contemplative lifestyle. The contemplative sees the facts, but they see through the facts to the truth. You know, what is really happening here? You know, if we're in a dysfunctional relationship, it's normally not about the other person. It's usually about us and our expectations, our projections, our attachments, our conditions. And then it's always liberating. And then the ego is innocent, as my friend Gloria G would say. Because we all have these little egos, and sometimes they get confused, and sometimes they project. I have expectations of you, Michael. And then you know what? Michael always disappoints me, but he always comes around in the end as the sweet thing that he is. So when we see contemplatively, we know that we live in a fully sacramental universe. It's all sacred. All of it. Where everything is a pointer and everything is an epiphany. Boy, my Zen calendar this week said, everything and everyone you encounter in your life is your teacher. And sometimes those teachers are uncomfortable teachers. You know, we watch the news, and I have a husband who's afraid if in August the old guy gets back in the presidency, I've already agreed that we'll take off to Canada if that should happen. I mean, it makes him happy to know that we have an escape route. So he's researching how to escape if the country... Well, you know, it's a logical concern of a neurotic Pisces, and I happen to have a lovely neurotic Pisces, 45 years. Anne-Marie knows him very well, and so we just do our best. At the very end of the book, he talks about this something bigger that's calling all of us, and he calls it a simple, open-hearted awareness. Now, you know, this speaks to someone like a David. You know, the symbol of Judaism is the Star of David. And that Star of David is an ancient symbol from Hinduism. It's the lower three chakras and the higher three chakras over the heart chakra. So, and Joseph Campbell explains that. So the whole essence of the Jewish tradition is that these aspects of ourself shine through the heart. And it's... So Richard Rohr is saying the same thing. He calls it open-hearted awareness. He said, observe and notice and sense the qualities of this heart space that we all have. It's where we can feel oneness. The head's duplicitous. It wants to judge and have answers. It wants all its conclusions. You know, you drown in your conclusions. Let go of all those conclusions. But the heart feels when the bird sings its song, it feels, when the tree embraces you, the heart. So he says, observe, notice the qualities of this heart space, and you will know that you have entered it, because it will feel as if you are within a vast spherical space where you cannot find a boundary and you cannot find an ending. Endings and beginnings, the spiral dance goes on. So there is no ending. Or if there is an ending, it's really a beginning. So he says this spaciousness doesn't have endings and beginnings. It just is beingness itself. It's in the heart space. He said it is a feeling of both intimate infinity and infinite intimacy. Don't you love that? Intimate infinity. You're intimate with the universe and infinite intimacy. It's intimate with you. Wow. There is a sense of warmth, all warmth. You feel encompassed and held. You feel embraced. You find that you are within the heart rather than the heart being within you. You're within the heart of God. Wow. So could you, in one of the great Sufi prayers, is put the suffering of the world in your heart, all the suffering of the world, and then offer your heart to the heart of the universe, to the heart of God. And in anything, you know, the universe can take care of it in such a way and find the grace in it. That's the portal for grace. So what if it's the suffering of God that we're experiencing in the world in form? I love the meeting over there in Europe with all the G7 people, because they're speaking a greater vision of working together, of providing a vaccine for all people. You know, not just the Americans, but everyone. How many millions of doses is he offering to the world? What a beautiful altruistic thing to do. I love it when our country errs on the side of generosity and compassion and helping others. You know, that I think that's what I love about America, is that we're the melting pot where everyone is welcome. Everyone. So, lastly, he says this. When you feel this expansive warmth, you can let it resonate through your body until perfect calm restores itself. The key word this morning in the revealing service was to relax. There's all this trauma out here, but if we can just relax into the breath, into the love, into the peace, and it starts to radiate from us. Yeah, the stuff in the mind is crazy. God knows, and it's not going to shut up. But you can be the awareness of that. For years and years, I think it was over 20 years, I would teach yoga classes. And the beautiful thing about yoga is you learn to witness your body, to witness how it moves, to witness the sensation, to witness the mind. And when you realize that you are the one observing it, well, then you can either put your attention on it, or you can withdraw your attention from it. And then your attention being your most valuable possession, where are we putting our attention? Maybe hold a rock and let the rock preach its gospel of peace, and let the rock and you have a sense of communion. I would say communication, but people think I'm crazy when they think the rock communicates, but it can have communion. Now, what is communion? It's where you have a tantric experience where we're not separate. Play with that. It's a game. Feel the inherent, always present blessing return. Always present blessing return. He says again and again and again. The blessing never stops. And he says it never really goes away from you. You only go away from it. It's not that God ever left us. It's that we leave his presence. Now, what would God be for you in your life? It's not an old man in the sky. It's as intimate as your own breath. They say in the Quran that the universe, Allah, is as close to you as your jugular vein. Now, it's a metaphor. It's pretty damn close then, isn't it? Could we say it's the breath within the breath? Wow. And every time we breathe, if we breathe consciously, we're having a direct experience. Breath being another word for spirit. So we're spiritual beings, and we're having a human experience. So could we be fully human to know that we're fully divine? It's not either or, it's both and. And then life becomes this glorious revelation. There's the big reveal. It has to reveal it to you in your life. It has to reveal it to me in my life. And each one gets to discover what that way is. And let me tell you, it's going to surprise you. It's not going to be what you thought it was. It's going to be something so much greater. And then you can just wait upon the Lord, as they say in the Bible. Wait upon the law. When conditions are right, things manifest. You know, Trey and I were without animals for a very long time because he didn't want to go through the grieving process. And we're having that now with old Bert. Every day is such filled with grace. And it's just when you say, I'll never do that again, that a little cat shows up at one of the rare parties I had for the church way back when. And she lived across the street. This girl was a dancer. I said, oh, I was a dancer. Well, she was a pole dancer. And I said, I never did that kind of dancing. But anyway, she went off to do whatever she did, and she left the little cat. And the cat decides to move in, and Trey says, go away. He kind of scoots the cat away. She wasn't going to leave that house. She moved in, and she stayed for a good 17 years. Her name was Smudge. And she was the queen of the house. So what if, when conditions are right, divine love, in its wisdom, will bring to us oftentimes the very thing you don't want, but it's the very thing you need. So I've learned to say that life is going to give me what I need. Even though I say, I remember saying, I'll go anywhere but Alabama, and I've loved every minute here. I said, I'll have anybody but him, and we've been together for over 45 years. So obviously, I don't know what's best for me, but the universe does. So this is a book that I was going to teach, and I can't teach it because it's way, way over my head. And if it's over my head, I'm not going to say anything about y'all, but it's extremely complicated, from Heidegger to Krishnamurti, where they talk about this something larger as this awareness that awakens within us. And the awareness awakens beyond thought. So you don't start labeling and concluding. It's so vast, and it accepts everything as that. And so then you're finding, you're leaping off the threshold of the known into the unknown, and all you want is the unknown. You don't want answers. You don't want someone give you a formula. And so let me just give you a tiny taste how he starts and how he ends. He says, in this openness that's calling us, flashes of enlightened mind can shine forth, taking you so radically beyond yourself that you actually discover your true nature, your original nature. You have a Moses experience, and you're launched into this thing, oh my God, I don't exist, but I'm existence itself. He says, to abide as that awareness in the simplicity and the luminosity of the present moment without any will or effort is to be ushered into a magical world that you never left, and thus to understand what it means to be coming home. Title of the book. Coming home, you've already arrived. It's not a place you get to, it's a place that you are. He says, a homecoming that is said to lead from time, which is the illusion, to eternity. It leads you from death to immortality. Spirit was never born and spirit never dies. And when you have that direct experience, well then, if you're crazy like me, you start having relationships with your animals that have transitioned. My twin sister and my little sister are getting together. They do this once a year. And they called me yesterday, and sure enough, I feel my mother's right there with them. I said, you know, Mom is there with you. Because the two of them, they like two halves of her. And so I can hear my mother through them. Now, do they think I'm crazy? Well, probably so, but you know what? That's fine with me. So he talks about this something bigger. Enlightenment is not a magical transcendence of our human condition, but rather is the full flowering of our humanity. He said, disclosing a unity and an equilibrium at the heart of the love and the suffering that we call life. It embraces the suffering as the suffering of the universe. You know, that St. Francis prayer out there is so amazingly beautiful. Let me be an instrument of your peace, of your compassion. He says, all existence is revealed to the enlightened human being as a seamless whole, as one divine life. The awakened person doesn't say this is wrong and this is good. It's all part of the divinity. The man that yelled at you with the gun about the dog being in the hole, it was just another person crying out that's confused. Could we take responsibility for how we respond? You know, because there's a lot of stuff going on out there right now. And I've realized that it's my job not to be pulled into some kind of Shempic triggered reaction, but to see, there's that reaction coming again. Lisa Ferraro had this beautiful metaphor, and I've been using it all week. It was from the Self-Realization Institute, where this young man was having these voices of criticism within. He says, this voice, you're not enough, you should be doing more. It shows up, and she said, here's what the Sadhguru said. I want you to take a mirror, and when that voice of I'm not good enough, I could be doing more comes, I want you to look in that mirror and say, I see you, but you're not me. I see you, you unworthy, crazy, neurotic, I'm not enough self, but that's not who I am. That's just a voice that comes up with it. And then you have a way of distancing yourself from that part of yourself that isn't your true nature. You know, this divine presence loves you unconditionally, and it's creating a pathway for you to be revealed here on earth. The very end of the book, he goes to one of the great Sufi teachers, Bawa. And just like Richard Rohr, he talks about the heart space, Raoul, as the way to experience this something bigger. And I always resonate with this heart space. So he says, Bawa was his name. He regards spiritual seekers as expressions of the one divine heart that's hidden within the human heart as essentially expressions of God. You are the heart, you are the hands, you are the voice of spirit on earth, and who you are, whoever you are, and all you do is a blessing to the world. So he says, Bawa shares this attitude about Allah. It is only God who seeks God. Remember, Allah brings to Allah whom Allah will. Allah means the emptiness out of which everything arises. So it is only God who seeks God. And he says the spiritual longing that expresses itself through the human being is none other than this divine power circling into itself. All is this divine creative expression. When I was working on the Anatomy of Inspiration and I'm 25 years old, I had that direct experience. Everyone that was experiencing their creative flow was being pulled by something that was bigger than them, and they were aware of it. And yet they couldn't resist it. They had to allow it to come through them. So it's God wanting to express itself, the divine power circling into itself. Bawa's intense love for seekers is simply his love for God, he said. So Bawa also shares with St. Paul the teachings of divine grace, which is not usually prominent in the path of the Sufis. When Bawa prays for the palace of grace in the heaven of Jnana, which is the mind, he is suggesting that gnosis, which is this deep knowing or liberating knowledge, does not originate from the seeker through their human efforts, but is received as a priceless gift from the divine. Wow. It's offering itself to us. We didn't do it. Our efforts, all your efforts won't get you to the first way station. So stop trying and just open and say, yes, I am ready. Use this life. It belongs to you. So yeah, I was playing with this idea all day yesterday, sitting in the garden, and letting everything be that something larger that's calling me, you know, whether it was the trees in the garden that are so ancient and they're rooted in the earth and they reach toward the sun, whether it's the humble little seedlings that I've got growing in my beds. Sylvia has harvesting her peas. My peas, they can't take the heat. So I had to euthanize all my peas, my sugar snaps. Well, because that may groom them for the tomatoes that like the hot sun and the pepper plants. So you're having a relationship with even the smallest of things in your garden, like I did with the little bug out here. And there was a beautiful man that came to the center years ago. He was a friend of Virginia Burroughs, and he was a poet. And he came to do a poet reading here at the center, Jerry Grubbs, and he talked about being pulled to this something larger by something as simple as a bee. And he wrote a poem called The Universe is a Bee, and how the bee literally awakened in his heart. I was so blown away with that poem that he ended up writing a book called The Universe is a Bee, and he dedicated the book to me, of all people, because of my enthusiasm for this poem. And I was thinking about what would be an inspirational way of that something bigger? And Jerry Grubbs' name just popped into my head. So it's called The Hive, and it's called The Book We Read for Its Honey. Now remember, everything is a metaphor. Jesus says, I speak, but they do not hear. So that's why he told his parables. Because again, Marie, the parable is a symbol. It's not logical. And when you give someone a symbol, hopefully there can be a direct awareness. So I'm going to close with Jerry's poem, and I want you to feel your way into it. This is someone like Moses who had an epiphany where he realized everything is sacred. Can we listen to the gospel of a simple bee and find that the universe exists within the bee? The universe is the one song, and everything is the universe. Whether it's the calla lilies are in bloom again. What a strange flower. I carried them at my wedding, and now I carry them. That's Katharine Hepburn in Stage Door. I got way too much stuff in here. The universe is a bee. This is my favorite poem. So this is for you, Jerry. The universe is a bee, a small golden thing, hovering in the midst of a great darkness, as if straining to let there be light, flickering wings, throwing off sparks. The universe is a bee, and each eye of the bee is a bee. And each wing is a bee. It is a bee of bees. Each bee the same. With bees for eyes, and bees for wings, and so on. Each spark that flies from its bee wings is a bee of light, is a river of light, is a river of bees. There are bees hidden in the bees, and bees hidden in the honey. Honey hidden in the bees, hiding in the honey, and hiding in the bees. The bee is a mind serene. One sentence for one page. The bee is a mind serene. The next page. The hum you hear now, dot, 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 is the bee at the center of everything. To be or not to be. No, that's something else entirely. In the beginning, night opened a window and let out its own light and called it bee. Nothing was made that was made without the bee. And the bee said, let there be hives. And there were hives. And the bee saw that they were good and very good. There are bees hidden in the mountains, among the cliffs, hives hidden in the trees, and hives hidden in the ground. And in the rocky places and in the walls, there is honey hidden in the mountain, and among the caves, hidden in the ground, and in the many places. The bee is a mind that moves in beauty. Ah, the universe is a bee that hovers above that dark flower, taking what it is given and turning it into light. The universe is a bee that hovers above that dark flower, taking what it is given and turning it into light. O bee of the universe, he says at end, give us thy light, necessary to find your dark honey. O bee of the universe, give us your light, necessary to find your dark honey. So I invite you to step into that vibration of the call of the universe to open itself in us, that something larger that says, be still and know. And in the stillness, we know. We don't think, we know. And we know that the I am is all there is. I am that I am. And so this universal presence is being. Being. And that being is light itself, shining. And the bee of our being drinks from the nectar of life through the flowers. And we create the honey, the sweetness, as an expression of who we are. So as we return to the breath, and we return to the sacred moment, we enter into the bee, to be or not to be. That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against a sea of troubles, and by opposing end them. To die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the thousand natural heartaches that the flesh is heir to. 'Tis a consummation devoutly to be wished, to die, to sleep. To sleep, perchance to dream. Aye, there's the rub. For what dreams may come when we shuffle off this mortal coil must give us pause. There's the respect that makes calamity of so long life. For who would bear the fardels and the proud man's contumely, the pains of despised love, and the insolence of office, the patient merit of the unworthy takes, when he himself might his quietus make with a bare bodkin. Who would fardels bear to grunt and sweat under a weary strain, but that threat of something after death, that undiscovered country from whose bore no travel returns, puzzles the will, and makes us rather bear those ills we have than fly to others we know not of. Thus conscience doth make cowards of us all. And thus the native hue of resolution is sicklied o'er by the pale cast of thought. And enterprises of great pitch and motion with this regard their currents turn awry and lose the name of action. Soft you now, the fair Ophelia. Nymph, in thy orisons be all my sins remembered. And from that place, we smile as we make amends. I invite you to place your hand on your heart and feel that sense of your own beingness, that sense of awe and wonder, that Moses consciousness that draws you out of the stream and into the light, and that we are that life form awakening in time and space, an ancient pattern that is happening intimately to each one of us, inviting us to be all that we are. I invite you to join with me in the heart salutation as you speak to the space within you by saying, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are the intimate space of the divine, flowering within the heart, being all that she is, love, peace, and joy, unfolding with ease and grace, and a great degree of peace and harmony. Open your eyes, open your hands. Look at the face of God. It's all around you, and it's you. Thank you for sending in your tithes, those of you in virtual land. And Glory G made us a new collection basket. She put a little elephant on it. I think it's so dear. So thank you all, and we'll see you on Wednesday night, Satsang.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.